Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We are pleased to be able to talk to Dan Evans, who is one of the most accomplished baseball guys, both from a scouting and a metrics point of view in the game over the last 40 years. And Dan, first of all, welcome in, and how are you doing? We're glad to have you on today.
I'm doing well, Bruce. Thanks to you and Matt for having me on, and hello to all my friends in the Midwest.
Tell us right now what you're doing with your sports management class that you're teaching online.
Oh, having lots of fun, Bruce. We've been doing it now for 8 years, and we have over 200 alumni throughout the game. It's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done, just mentoring young people, young men and women who want to get into baseball, a weekly online class, and it's just been absolutely an amazing addition to my life. I'm really, really proud of what we've accomplished, and we've got some wonderful people working throughout the game.
That's Sports Management Worldwide. You can find that agency and find those courses. And Dan, these days, also on the board of directors for Sabre and a member of the Baseball Perspectives Advisory Board. But we know you as the Lane Tech kid who goes to DePaul and ends up as an intern with the White Sox, an assistant GM, and then eventually the GM of the Dodgers. So you've been around the block just a little bit there, Danny Evans. Would you tell people what Tony La Russa's role is in sort of the history of sabermetrics, in like the development of analytics? Because that part of it, I think, has been misplaced angst in the conversation here, because Tony, as a binder guy, he and Dave Duncan, those were some of the first guys on the forefront of this movement.
Well, and Matt, first of all, I'm really proud of my Lane Tech and my DePaul days. They really shaped me into who I am today. I love those two places. Those are key moments in my life. I was really lucky. I started with the White Sox as a 20-year-old junior at DePaul, and Tony La Russa was my boss. He and Roland Heeman were the guys, and Dave Duncan and I were extremely close. And we were just very quiet about what we were doing from a pioneering standpoint, using analytics and using metrics and video to try to enable us to get where we wanted to be. The difference between us and a lot of clubs, as Bruce knows really well, is really, really, really kept it confidential. It was really hard for anyone to find out what we were doing. And Tony used data and used matchups extremely well. He was a huge fan of Sparky Anderson and of Earl Weaver. And Earl Weaver, everybody knows him for his arguments and his winning and his World Series. But Earl Weaver and Casey Stengel were really the first people who used analytics extraordinarily. And Tony really wanted to get to the level of Earl Weaver and found ways, along with Charlie Lau and Dave Duncan, to give us some information, some answers to questions that we didn't have. Things like playing a left-handed third baseman, things like when to pitch a certain guy. His gut was always the way he made decisions. I admired the fact that he was able to absorb a ton of information on a daily basis. But what he really did, guys, is he made players and staff highly accountable and utilized his knowledge of the game, his gut instincts and analytics to give him answers to questions that, you know, that perplexed him, that I think were standing in the way of him getting to the next level. And I think what people don't realize is how aggressive he was trying to advance that. He's one of the greatest managers of all time, and that hidden element about him is known by very few people.
Dan Evans, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Matt. I'm Bruce. We're here for you 52 weeks out of the year talking baseball, 9 to 11, every Saturday morning on The Score. Danny, taking that further, metrics-wise, with Tony, did you start with the 4x6 cards, or did the binder come first as far as information? And what exactly in those initial metrics that he used during a ball game, what was that information that he was looking at?
Bruce, great question. He was looking for batter-pitcher matchups, vice versa, whether it was offense or defense. I marveled at the way he would position people for days off, knowing 3-4 days in advance how they matched up against a starting pitcher. You know, little things like that made a big difference from a communication standpoint. Tony does one thing better than any, or two things, I think, better than anybody I've ever seen. Number one, he manages a bullpen extraordinarily well, but I would say he manages a bullpen extraordinarily well with Dave Duncan leading him, because Duncan, for me, is the best pitching coach I've ever been around. But the other thing he did is Tony was always trying to put players in positions where they could thrive and not fail. He's really, really strategically sound when it comes to asking players to do things that they're capable of. So what we would do is we would look for places in the lineup or bullpen matchups that were ideal in terms of our squad. And whether it was making out a lineup, perhaps it was starting a guy on a rotation day, maybe using a bullpen matchup. He was so good at it, Bruce. And that's how it really originated. We did some things where we moved the dimensions of the ballpark through the front office simply because of findings we found from a computer-generated information bank. But Dave Duncan brought binders the first day I met him. He brought them to my house in Lincoln Square. And my parents and I kind of marveled at how prepared he was. And my goal was to fill up those folders and those binders, and I did that as well as I could.
See, this is, I think, really important stuff for people to realize, that Tony has been miscast as like an old baseball guy who wasn't in on some of this stuff or wouldn't be in on some of this stuff. But then the question is, how would he adapt now? Because guess what? Even in the 9 years since he's been a manager, baseball has progressed and changed and evolved even more. And I guess I think about it this way, Dan. The way that Tony and Dave kind of invented and perfected the bullpen, Eckersley as your one-inning guy at the end, Catteray, right, Gene Nelson as your short righty, Honeycutt as your short lefty, Catteray as your long lefty, and Eric Plunk as your long righty, right? It's like, and everybody did that. Nowadays, it's all over the place. Diego Castillo might be used in the fifth, or he might be used in the ninth. There might be 9 different guys you use. Would Tony be ready for this kind of Craig Council-infused, Tampa Rays-inspired, modern way that a bullpen is used that is very different from the way that he and Dave invented and perfected?
Hey, Matt, first of all, great point. That's great insight. He really did reinvent the bullpen use, and it was amazing to watch. And the game for the last 30 years really took on that look until the last few. I think one of the keys here would be the club would have to be constructed. And here's some, Bruce and I talked about this about 10 years ago. I think one of the best lessons I learned as a general manager and as an assistant is no matter how much you believe in something, the manager of the team has to be what you're thinking about when you construct a ball club. Because to give him the weapons that he needs to win or lose, you have to build it around his philosophical approach. Just because I like a certain guy as a general manager doesn't mean that the manager would use him that way. So I think the ball club would have to be constructed with La Russa's philosophical approach in mind. It needs to be his team. He'd have to have some veteran contributors on the bench, some guys who can do some platoon moves. You know, the bullpen, Matt, is only as good as the effectiveness as the pitchers. There's all sorts of ways to run a bullpen, but it just comes down to not taxing them, putting them in situations they can thrive, and having a game plan so everybody understands their role. For the listeners, players are great being led. They just need to be told what their role is so they're mentally focused for that day. You know, the White Sox were, 35 and 25 this year, and it wasn't good enough. It just wasn't good enough to get in to the playoffs where they wanted to be. It wasn't good enough in the first round. So in order for them to get to the next step, I think their players would have to be extremely accountable, because that's one thing that La Russa demands of his players: professionalism, preparation, and accountability. He doesn't tolerate excuses, and he doesn't tolerate a mediocre effort or preparation. So this young White Sox team would have to really step up their game mentally and from a professional standpoint to be able to be ready to win. There's no doubt he can translate to a successful manager in 2021. I mean, it would take some adaptation, but he's a brilliant guy, and he brings a track record and a credibility to the clubhouse unlike very few people. But here's my issue. A lot of those players never saw him manage. So his credibility is going to be more on paper, more because of a Cooperstown plaque. I saw it when Joe Torre took over the Dodgers, and there were some young players that just didn't buy it at first and didn't understand exactly who he was. And that's the challenge when somebody comes back. Luckily, Tony's been a part of the sport. He's been, you know, fully immersed. So I think the transition wouldn't be as great as it would be from some other people.
That's a great, great insight there, Dan. And I think it brings to the question, we're so used to these days it being a general manager's vision that the manager is a partner of. And Tony is used to a world where it's his vision and the general manager is a part of that. And I think you hit on that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but he's a team player, and that's the great thing about him. I mean, he took this 20-year-old kid in college and was great to me. I mean, you know, I remember throwing some things at him, and he'd give you this quizzical look, and then he wants you to explain it. So he's trusting. He's a team player. But I think, and I love Rick Hahn. Rick Hahn's one of the best people in the game. I think Rick and his staff would just have to adapt somewhat to tailor the club more to his managing style instead of what you said, Matt. It's keen insight. A lot of general managers jam managers today with their club and their philosophy. And I think that's wholly unfair and really unprofessional, simply because if you're going to fire the manager later on for him not winning with your philosophical approach and your roster without input, I think that's absolutely horrible. And I think it's a trend that some guys have taken, and you and Bruce are aware, guys have done that, and then they discard the manager as if the manager failed, when in fact the front office failed. And to me, you're in this together, you build the team for him, and you win or lose together.
Danny, you know Jerry Reinsdorf, you've worked for him for a long time, you've observed him for your entire career as a baseball man. Give us some insight as to what he is thinking and what he talks to Rick and to Kenny Williams about as to why he might want them to consider Tony La Russa as the next manager.
Well, first of all, Jerry's feel for the game is extraordinary. I mean, it's unbelievable. I've worked for quite a few owners in my career. No one's even close to his insight, his feel for the sport, and his networking ability after 40 years of the owner is extraordinary. He makes you very accountable, asks a lot of questions. Decisions aren't made. And, you know, I mean, Bruce, one of the things that people don't realize is, why wouldn't an owner be involved? He's got a $1 billion business. And, I mean, I would be disappointed if an owner didn't want to be involved. But in his case, I think he's at a stage in his life, in his career as an owner, he'd like to win more time. And I think that's fabulous. And I think the surge of the White Sox in 2020, my gosh, what a fun team to watch. All kinds of enthusiasm. I think Jerry probably looks at this team as this is an opportunity for him to grab another ring and win another championship at a stage in his life where he's looking at, you know, he doesn't have a finite, I mean, he doesn't have an infinite number of years left as the owner. And my guess is he's looking, how can I best top off this team? But you have to give him credit. In 86, which was a blunderous year for the franchise, it was a disaster. It was easily the worst year I've ever experienced in the front office. It was just a nightmare experience. You know, La Russa got fired, one of the worst days of my career, and Duncan went with him, and a lot of other people went with him too. For Jerry to look back at that and try to right a wrong, I give him a lot of credit, because even contemplating it is a major step. Most people wouldn't want to confront that because it's uncomfortable. But sometimes the uncomfortable move turns out to be a really good option. Whether they'll do it or not, you know, that doesn't just come down to Jerry. That comes down to Tony, too. But the fact that it's even in consideration shows me a lot of character. And it also shows me that he really gives a damn about his franchise and about the fans, that he's trying to explore whatever options there are at a very critical time in the franchise's history. This team is a really good club, but winning is not easy. It's tough. And whoever gets this job, you know, the expectations, guys, are not to get into the playoffs. They're to win the World Series. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made the move they made.
You bet, Danny. Danny Evans, a great friend, a great baseball man, and thank you so much for all the insight that you've given us today in this last 17 minutes, which has been phenomenal, talking about Tony La Russa. We need to have you on again soon to talk about some other things, because there's so much in baseball going on with the meshing of scouting and metrics that are so essential, and nobody knows it better than Dan Evans. Dan, thanks so much for joining us today. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Kind words, Bruce, and I love going on with you guys. And for everybody, keep your eyes on the Field of Dreams. There's going to be an announcement later this week that I think you'll all enjoy, and it'll be a big addition to Midwest baseball.
Danny. Thanks for the tease. We appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Danny Evans joining us on Take Care, Dan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.